Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Great to be back today. And today on the show, we have Colm from IDPal. Colm is the founder and also the CEO of IDPal out in Ireland. And it's awesome to have Colm on the show today. He's an industry expert. He's been around in the game for a while. He's had some really great experience across financial services, which included being a sales trader and also working on prop desks. So Colm, really excited, super stoked actually to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Super. Thank you very much, Richard. Great to be here.
Cool. Listen, let's dive in. And what I wanted to start off with today was just getting a bit of understanding in and around your life as a founder and a CEO. Maybe the first part of that is just getting the insights around what you wish everybody knew about being a founder and CEO. So those folk that are either just embarking or midway through their journey, what do you think they need to know about your role?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of elements and a couple of streams to that. Definitely someone who is starting out as a founder and CEO. I think reality and the picture it might be painted are very, very different. So, you know, I think it's similar to the idea of building a house or becoming a parent. Those ideas where you think you know what it is because your friends have done it, but then it actually happens to you and it's a totally different experience. So I think it's extremely difficult to actually explain the reality of being a founder and CEO. The one thing I would definitely say, there's probably two things I would say in terms of advice. The first would be, make sure you understand the time, the effort, the commitment, and the changes that are going to happen to your lifestyle, because they're absolutely life-changing. You live and breathe everything about that company, and it's difficult to switch off. It's difficult to turn off. The other thing I would say is definitely around the people that are around you, especially your partners, your wife, your husband, making sure that they're also on that train with you and that they understand the commitment that's going to be given. I'm probably lucky from my perspective that my own wife, her family came from an entrepreneurial background. So she was used to the lifestyle changes and the ups and downs that come with that kind of journey. But it's you really, as a founder and CEO, you're living and breathing it every day. You cannot switch off. If you do, you're probably not the right person for the role or for the job. So it's difficult, but it comes with incredible reward. And that's the kind of reward that, again, it's so hard to explain and so hard to paint that picture of exactly what that reward is. And it's the simple things. It could be your first customer. It could be the first time you present your product to an audience. All those little things, all those bits of encouragement. You see something on Twitter or something on LinkedIn about your product. Someone makes a comment. They're all things that kind of keep you driving forward in terms of your business. But it is. It's a commitment. It's a lifestyle choice. It's definitely not for everyone, but I personally love it.
And I was wondering, you mentioned lifestyle choice and a commitment. Is there also in your view or experience, is there also a commitment to learn and continue to learn? Because I get a feeling that founders and CEOs, it's something that can be learned, right? And it's something, it's a skill that needs to be learned over a course of time. So you're not going to have everything on day zero. You have to build it up gradually.
Yeah, no, look, I'm a true believer that I don't know everything and people don't know everything. And I would definitely use a lot of people around me in my life to bounce ideas off, to gain their experience, to gain their knowledge. There's a couple of people that I would classify as mentors of mine. You know, and again, I was never a CEO of a business. I have been a founder of other businesses that haven't gone to where IDPal has gone. Yeah. So you're always learning, and you have to help yourself by getting the insights and experience of people who have done it in the past. So having scars in your past is a good thing. because if you have scars, you're not going to make those same mistakes again. So people that have experience, people who are have done it before, learning from their scars so that you don't get that scar, I think is extremely important.
And you talk about having people, maybe your close circle around you and experience around you. How have you gone about building out that, maybe that inner circle, for want of a better word, and leveraging the experience of these folk, for example, sales or marketing or even operational and technology production?
Yeah, and I think again, sometimes it's different when you're trying to build a business and your mindset changes in terms of trying to build a business to if you're in, say, a sales job and you're in a sales job or in marketing, and you might be afraid to reach out to people. Whereas when you're trying to build a business, you have no choice but to reach out to people. And when you start thinking about your network and people you've previously worked with, and maybe a boss of a business or CEO of a business that you actually never really interacted with, but now you need to know their insights. Now you want to speak to them. And I think you have to be encouraged, and you have to have that maybe brazen nature to actually reach out, get their phone number, ring them, meet them for a coffee, have those conversations. But once you start thinking about your network, we might think that our networks are actually quite small. Once you start really expanding and thinking about your network, they're huge, you know, and there's people in all walks of life with various experience from tech to product to marketing. That you know you've either been in college with, you've worked with, so it's definitely leveraging off those networks, but having the ability to pick up that phone, give them a call, and introduce yourself again.
So being fearless, and then you mentioned networks, and I think part of networks is relationships, right? Having the ability to be fearless, create that relationship, and then work together and collaborate on a particular part of your business, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, agreed. You know, and there's definitely people as well who have a particular niche skill set, and you know who to go to when you have that question. But the ability to listen to people, I think, is extremely important. So a lot of the time you would see founders, CEOs, where they feel that they know everything. They might be a little bit, don't want to be in a place where they're showing signs of weakness by saying that they don't know something. But when speaking to people, I think you need to be able to listen and take in what you need to take in. Advice is advice. Everyone's got an opinion. But taking all those opinions on board and relating that back to your business for what suits your business, I think is essential.
And you mentioned earlier on around the, I guess, being a founder and a CEO, it's probably part of your DNA. It's part of who you are. It's not 9 to 5, it's not Monday to Friday, it's probably whatever time in the morning, 5 in the morning, or whatever time in the morning to whatever time at night, 7 days a week, it's part and parcel of your life. I mean, how have you built this into your life, being a running your company, obviously having a wife and you know, having a family and, you know, having friends, you know, liking tennis, football, all that stuff? How have you incorporated and focused on business and also the good stuff outside of running a business?
Yeah, so the good old work-life balance.
I didn't say work-life balance.
it is in a way, and I don't think, you know, I'll be the first to admit it, I've no balance in my life. I just don't. Have I more balance now than I did 3 years ago? 100%, I do. Yeah. And will it be better again in 3 years' time? I fully expect it will. But for those couple of first years, you can't have balance. You can't switch off. I got 2 young kids. They go to sleep at night and they're going to sleep. So you can switch off about them being asleep. And your business keeps going. It never stops. So it's extremely hard to get that balance because you can't switch off. Your mind is constantly racing on the next thing. It's definitely something we would speak about a lot in the office. And I try and encourage that staff have that work-life balance because it's extremely important. Burnout is huge. Stress levels are huge. There's a number of things that we've done internally in the office. Again, do as I say and not as I do, unfortunately, in this instance. There's a lot of other things I would say I would look at it differently. But in that regard, I do try and encourage staff to make sure that they do have that work-life balance. We have a company call at 4 o'clock every Friday. The intention of that company call is that everyone works towards that 4 o'clock so that they can cut off their day. So, you know, you're not working until 5, 6, 7 on a weekend. Grab a beer. That company call as well. It's just a catch up. It's not about the business. It's not anything formal. It's very casual. So there's a lot of things that we put in place to try and help people. But again, back to people's DNAs, some people don't have it in them to turn themselves off.
Yeah.
But as a business owner, I suppose, you try and manage each of those individuals the best you can to make sure that they're taking the time off, they're taking the holidays. This last year and a half has been extremely difficult because of holidays. You take 2 weeks off, where do you go? You can't go anywhere. So you just go back, you go back to your desktop.
Yeah. I like what you're saying about sort of production, for want of a better word, ends at 4 o'clock on a Friday. I was chatting to another guest a few weeks ago, and they, just before COVID hit, 18, 20 months ago, they implemented a policy where they ran a hypothesis and they said, let's see if we can run a 4-day working week. So yeah, they did. They did it Monday to Thursday. And that's what they did for like 6 months. And they, it was quite incredible, the stats that they got out of it. This productivity was up, sales was up, lots of good things were happening. So very quickly, they found the hypothesis was working. The end day production was Thursday at 5 o'clock. And now I link back into them and check out what they're doing on LinkedIn. Part of their story is this 4-day working week, which I'm just coming back to, I guess, the question, a question early on, which is, you know, as business owners and as leaders, it's not always about running on the treadmill, right? It's also about making certain that our teams are productive.
Yeah, like we're very lucky, I think, in our company with the staff that have come in. So yeah, we in 6 years, we have only ever lost one member of staff. That's which right. I think is incredible for a startup, especially in your early years when you cannot pay the same wages, you don't have the same perks that you can give. So creating that culture within a business, there's a lot of conversations, a lot of talks about these 4-day weeks.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's the right thing or not. We haven't tried it. But, you know, I think I was reading Iceland? I think Iceland is the latest one of the 4-day week. But again, it was 36 hours that they were doing in the week rather than 40. So it's not really a 4-day week either.
Fair enough.
I think, again, with people, I know people who do 4-day weeks. I know people who do 3-day weeks.
Yeah,
they always say to me, I'm cramming in 5 days into 4.
Yeah.
So it'll be an extremely hard thing to do, I think, as a business, unless the business was fully on board.
Yeah, 100%.
You're also a provider of a service, so you need to make sure that you have certain resources that are there. So if you have somebody monitoring something and those two people are on 4-day weeks and they're both want to take the same days and you've no one to cover. So there's, I don't think it's as simple and as straightforward for a lot of businesses. It's probably, if you were to think about 10 years' time and life being better for people, having that long weekend, it'd be super. It'd definitely give you a better life, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And as you look back on your journey now over the last few years as someone that's leading a startup and, you know, obviously growing right now, what do you think has fundamentally changed from day one until now?
Yeah, so I think my job is very different to where it was day one, but there's still a lot of elements that are very much the same. So I'm a big believer in being part of the company. Yeah, I'm the CEO and I'm the person who makes the big decisions. But I still want to be part of the team. We have an open plan office. So I want to sit in the middle of that open plan office so I can be part of what everyone else has been part of.
Yeah.
So there's things like that won't change for me. I don't want my glass box in the corner looking down on everyone else. That's not the way we've structured the business.
Yeah.
We're a very flatline organization. In terms of things that have changed, a lot of my tasks they're far bigger tasks rather than a lot of small things that need to actually happen to keep the business going. So I've previously done a lot of operational parts of the business. Now it's very much on that kind of strategic focus, making sure that we're going to be in the right place, we're properly funded, our customers are happy, we're following what the market trends are, or we're getting ahead of those trends. So it is different, but there's still that element of needing to make sure that where I was from that first year, that I don't lose touch with that. I still spend 5%, 10% of my day on sales as part of the business. So I still want to give demos to customers because I want that feedback. I need to stay close to a customer to understand it. So I never want to lose that touch. But yeah, there's a lot more responsibility on your shoulders when you have a larger workforce and when you have investors, and you're not just reliant on yourself.
Yeah, and you mentioned strategy, market trends, etc. So, you know, it'd be good to understand and what, for our listeners anyway, what the mission of ID Pal is. What are you guys looking to do?
Yeah, so it's quite simple. It's allowing people identify who they are to make a transaction. So in simple terms, you have, it's enabling that seamless exchange of trusted identities. And so from a business perspective, you have certainty that that person is who they say they are. But from a consumer perspective or from a retail perspective, it's the easiest way possible to actually identify who you actually are.
Okay. And how does this play out? I mean, is this, I guess what I was wondering is, what is the use case? Maybe we can walk through a simple use case just to bring it to life for our listeners, how the tech exactly works.
Yeah, so the use case, and again, I think we're in a different world to where we were 10 years ago. So the large majority of our customer base is financial services. So the idea of simply open up a bank account, go into an accountancy practice, solicitor, any of those standard financial services organizations. So because of legislation, because of anti-money laundering, you need to verify your identity. It's your standard passport, your driver's license, your proof of address. So traditionally what was happening was either a database would be used or you would photocopy documentation, get documentation stamped, you'd be posted in, you'd be emailed it in. Very bureaucratic, time-consuming, costly, and not a good customer experience either. So with ID Pal, we simply have a mobile app that allows you capture your identity information anytime, anywhere. So you could be sitting in the comfort of your own home, 11 o'clock at night, or you could be boarding a plane on the way to Milan, and you're simply capturing a picture of your IDs, and you're doing facial recognition, liveness tests, we're matching your face to the document, we're verifying that the document is real and valid, so we have algorithms that we can run across those documents, and literally within 60 seconds, that is submitted to a business. And we have what's called real-time decisioning. And so a human doesn't even have to intervene in that regards, assuming all the checks have passed. So again, it's creating kind of real-time decisions. It's making it simple for the consumer, making it quick and easy for the business, and giving the business confidence that the person that's submitting the information is a real and genuine person.
So fascinating use case. And it sounds quite sort of niche and specific, which is awesome. And I guess my what I'm wondering is, in the initial days, how did you go out, and even starting from day dot to now, how has your promotion of your product changed? So what did you do initially to get the word out there, and how, what are you doing right now to promote your product to your audience, prospects, and also customers?
Yeah, so I suppose day one, it was knocking on doors. It was a
good old fashioned knocking on doors.
It was, you know, you could promote yourself as much as you want, but if no one knows who you are, it's not going to land. So I was lucky that I had been 15, 20 years in financial services. A lot of the other co-founders were in the same boat. So we were essentially reaching out to those people, setting up meetings, getting them understanding what we're about. And that was back in 2015 when I think everyone talks about digital ID and V now or digital identity, and it just rolls off the tongue. Everyone knows about it. 6 years ago, that's not the way it was. It was still pretty young.
Yeah.
And it is still a pretty young market. But that's what it was. It was knocking on doors, meeting as many people, telling your story to as many people as possible. We applied for a number of accelerator programs. On those programs, you get introduced to some of the large corporates and individuals who are helping with the mentoring. And so you're just building your network in that way. But, you know, now it's very much, especially in our home market, businesses are probably aware of who we are. We've hundreds of customers using the service. Yeah. There's a lot of word of mouth. We've a pretty successful referral scheme that goes on, which is a great testament to the product as well. But again, you're using your social networks. LinkedIn would obviously be a big social network for ID Pal. We're now getting into sponsoring events, things like that. So it is very much moving. You can't be always just knocking on doors the old-fashioned way. And you try and automate as much of the process as you can as well.
You mentioned the move from obviously knocking on doors to social and sponsoring events. And I guess I was wondering, what do you think the difference is between the social side of things, i.e. using LinkedIn or Twitter, as opposed to going off and sponsoring a fintech event?
Yeah, there's different ways of looking at it. So, you know, you could look at it very crudely and go, it's about the return on investment. So, okay, we sponsored a fintech event. Did we get any sales from it or did we not? So assuming, let's say we got no sales from it, we sponsored it, it cost us €10,000. Is that a waste of €10,000? It's definitely not, because you can't look at it like that. Hmm. We sponsored an event that there was 3,000 people, that a certain percentage of those would have seen our logo, would have seen our brand, and it's creating that brand awareness. Hmm. So it's not all about landing a customer. And in the game of business as well, it's about long-term. It's not just about that event. It's the next event. It's the following event. And somebody sees something the first time, the second time they recognize it, third time they're going, okay, I'm interested in that. So even though it started at the very first event, it happened in the third event. Yeah. And you can't relate that return investment back to the first one. So it's very different to sponsoring events and putting advertising into suppliers' magazines and things like that to actually a LinkedIn campaign. So a LinkedIn campaign, you can have your analysis there in terms of who clicked on it, and you can follow them in terms of after they clicked on it, did they receive a demo, did they sign up, and you can relate that back and have your metrics from that side. So there's no one size fits all in that regard, and you have to manage all those things as best you can, but they're not all the same.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think part and parcel of this is you mentioned brand awareness, but it's also making certain that you're visible in the market and are slowly but surely strengthening your place in the market as a leader and someone that, or a product or a business that people want to talk to. So other than working on events and LinkedIn, what other aspects have you gone down to strengthen your place in the market as leaders? And obviously, you mentioned that you got a good referral scheme and what have you, so to get you into that position as you grow and you scale.
Yeah, and I think to be a thought leader in the market, you need to have content that's going out from your own profile. It needs to be the right content. And a lot of the time you might see it's just this daily stream of content that's literally unrelated to actually what you're doing. So it's about having good quality content so that when someone sees you, they're always interested in actually what you're saying, what you're doing.
Yeah.
Getting to speak at events, and I'm not talking about paying to speak at events, but even associations, being brought into associations where they may be having a day workshop on compliance and they're asking you to come in to talk about digital identity for a 30-minute slot. That's when you're getting in front of an audience that want to know and want to hear. So again, choosing your audience correct and not just spraying it out to everyone. So we know the particular markets that IDPAL lands well in. We know who the personas and who the buyers are. So they're the people that we'll focus on, and they're the people that we will put out relevant information to them, because that's what it's about. It's about being relevant to who your buyers are. And I think that helps.
Yeah, and you mentioned content, and you also mentioned obviously speaking. I mean, from a content point of view, what are the things that you guys are doing that allows your audience to view you as something that, listen, these guys know what they're talking about, let's follow them or let's interact with them?
Yeah, so being associated with particular brands, particular names, particular companies is important. So I know this time last year, we ran a certain program with a company that are quite large in the payment space called PIF. And what we did with PIF was we developed a document that asked all the relevant questions that you need to be asking from an identity provider. And that content then can be given to anyone, any prospect who's looking to actually identify who they want to get a demo of, who they want more information from. But it gives people that sense of, okay, we know what we're talking about. These are relevant questions. We didn't think about half of these questions because we don't know about digital ID and V. These guys, IDPAL, do put this in front of it. They're thinking about it in the right way. They're asking the right questions. And of course, we have all the answers for them. So that's the other side to it. But yeah, it's about the relevant content. And it's about associating yourself with organizations. So there's certain organizations that we're associated with. So if you're a business and you're associated with that organization, and because of that association, you see IDPAL, that gives them confidence that, okay, they're associated, I'll move forward with IDPAL. So it is, but it takes time because associations don't want to jump into bed with everyone. I think we have gone past the startup phase in our life. It is a proper business now.
Yeah.
That also helps because associations, a lot of the time, they will be fearful of a startup, definitely in their early days.
And you mentioned you've gone through the startup phase you run your proper business now. So you guys obviously grow, you're doing some fantastic stuff. But as you've gone through that journey, how have you approached making sort of the big decisions that obviously have allowed you to get to this position?
Yeah, I think decision making is easy, but it's about making the right decisions. And that's the hard part. It's about getting consistency of making the right decisions. There's a couple of elements to decisions. So you definitely need to know who else needs to be involved in that decision-making process. So, you don't want to be making decisions based off a lack of knowledge. We would definitely use a lot of analytics for a lot of our decision-making, particularly around product. The actual ability to make a decision, though, especially the bigger ones for the business, I think it's very hard to go wrong if you have a simple question of, is this the right thing for the company? So if you are looking at every decision and going, is this the right thing for the company? So you're not going, is this the right thing for Cullum Lines? Is this the right thing for the executives? Is this the right thing for the investors? You shouldn't look at it like that. So you should always look at it as, is this the right thing for the business? Because if it's the right thing for the business, it'll mean the business is successful. It'll mean I'll be successful. It'll mean all our staff is successful. It'll mean our investors, our customers, everyone gains from that success. So that's one thing I would always look at in terms of a big decision. And it starts from the top. Is it the right thing for the business?
Yeah. And, as you are moving forward in the coming months, in the coming years, what factors are you and your team looking at right now? And what initiatives are you considering as you go into the next part of your growth cycle?
Yeah, I probably have a list as long as my arm in terms of things that I'm looking at, to be honest.
And it's England to win the Euros, yes?
England to win the Euros, yeah. Yeah, it's really about, there's a lot of conversations and a lot of talk about self-sovereign identity and where we are going with that. Yeah. That would be a big concentration of our time and our efforts. To make sure, you can have a product and the product works and you can have a load of customers and everyone's happy. If you're not moving with the times and moving with the market, you'll get left behind. So that would be one thing that we're definitely concentrating on, to make sure that we are part of what is happening in the future. We're involved in a lot of international programs around that kind of self-sovereign identity, around the trusted exchanges of identities, around kind of this reusable profile, the ability to have your identity as a wallet. So there's a lot of time and a lot of effort spent in thinking about that future and where the market is going and how it's going. And again, having the relevant conversations with those countries who are looking to run these particular programs, these pilots, and being involved in that. So that will probably be the biggest concentration.
Oh, awesome. Sounds exciting. And, as we head towards the end of the show, what is one lesson or one takeaway that you think is important for our listeners to know and understand as either they're starting out on their scaling journey or they're sort of midway through and seeking to grow?
Yeah, so possibly the idea of it's how we look at it. So just because other companies have done it in a particular way does not mean that that's the right thing to do. So you as a business, you have to question that why word needs to always be there. So why are we doing this? And that's what can differentiate you from the crowd as well, is by actually going in a different direction. So again, going back to the decision making, there's safe decisions and then there's a little bit more dangerous decisions, and you need to get that balance right. Some people take a hell of a lot of risks and it works out for them. Others, it doesn't. But I would definitely just question all those larger strategic decisions as to why. Don't follow just because other companies are doing it. because you'll just end up being the same as everyone else. And it mightn't make sense for your business either, because each business, even though there's multiple identity verification businesses, we are all very complex and very different behind the scenes. And something that might suit our business may not necessarily suit another competitor's business, who seems on the face of it from websites, these are the exact same companies. So yeah, I would say just always question the decisions that you're making in terms of why you're doing it.
Awesome. Some sage advice there. And, you know, we mentioned at the top of the show around, we spoke about, you know, making certain that as a founder and CEO and leaders, we continuously learn. And I'd like to sort of finish up the show on that note and maybe dive into a book or podcast or YouTube channel that you listen to or have read in the past or currently that you think would be useful to the folk, our listeners, and on their scaling journey.
Yeah, it's no hidden secret about me within the office that books are not something that I, whatever it is, maybe it's about my personality, I can't get lost in a book. Yeah. I've read, embarrassingly enough, I've read 3 books in my life. And one of the biggest pop-ups that keeps appearing on any of my social platforms is a pop-up telling me that the best CEOs read 30 books a month. And this is what should be doing. And I always have to flick through it pretty quickly. The first ever book I did read was Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson. The other two I won't mention because they were totally unrelated. They were fictional. But, you know, I don't know. That's like, I did. I genuinely really enjoyed that book. I do listen to podcasts. I think the biggest source of information for me is, and some people would see it as spam, but I sign up for a lot of newsletters. That could be Crunchbase. It could be, you know, any of these websites. I probably get 20 of them into my inbox every single day. Mm. And where a lot of people will be unsubscribing, a lot of people will be just going XXX. For me, they are the source of information. So you can flick through. You don't have to read all the information. Mm. You just look at the headlines. If there's something that's catching your attention, click on it and you get to read it. So instead of being focused on a book or a podcast, the amount of information that you will get from all these types of newsletters that are coming in and how quickly you can sift through them, I think, is just, it's a world of information for me. Mm. And again, when you click into them, they're minute articles, they're 3-minute reads, and so you can get what you need very, very quickly. So there's a lot of companies out there in our space. There's a particular company who we work with called KYC Global or Risk Screen. They have a weekly email every Friday around anti-money laundering in particular. And it's excellent. It's a great read every Friday. And I look forward to seeing it. So yeah, that would be my advice is sign up to all those newsletters. Again, they need to be relevant to what you're doing, what your industry is. But they're super sources of information.
Yeah, I like it. That's a great tip. And actually, the first time anyone's mentioned that. So there we go. I like it.
Good to hear.
Cool, man. And so as we wrap up the show, how can folk get in touch with you and the team at IDPal?
Yeah, so just log on to our website. It's www.id-pal.com. And all the information is there. Even if you go into our team, you'll get our work emails are all on the website. So yeah, it's great.
Cool, mate. It's been an awesome show today. Loved diving into different parts of your founder's journey and also obviously understanding what you guys at IDPal do today, and looking forward to watching you guys scale up and really motor on in the not too distant future.
Super. It's been great, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.